Welcome back to The Pit. It's William Atkinson here with host
John LeMay.
And we have best-selling author Justina Luther on the show for the third episode in a row. And today we're doing another Plot Pit Brain Hash, forging fiction from fact and folklore. Hello, Justina. How are you doing?
I am doing very well, thank you.
And you've brought to us three subjects to talk about today.
Yes, I was thinking about different elements from past books of mine and decided to throw three words at you and see what sticks. Dementia, stalker, addict.
Excellent. Dementia, stalker, and addict. I almost said static. Today in the pit, let's begin the descent. Justina, we have your three subject matters today. John, what did you bring?
Well, I didn't bring anything. I literally had an idea off of those three words, and they're going to tie into our last episode. Our last episode in the vernacular of a 90s sitcom, I would say, was a very special episode. It was just a nice interview with Justina about what it's like to be an author. And one of the things Justina and I talked about and shared was when you write too many books, it's hard on your brain. You definitely start to forget things. And so that's taking me in the direction of the word dementia she mentioned. And we also talked about her book, Whiskey Haze, which was more of a drama. You know, no sci-fi, you know, it's just a nice down-to-earth drama. And that's our goal this episode. William and I always go with magic and fairies and monsters. We're going to try really hard to actually do a down-to-earth drama this time.
Well, so, y'all have seen that I am multi-genre, so yeah. I am more than happy to try to make you guys break out of your box.
So, Justina, for our listeners who might be tuning in for the first time, you are author of BioLife, Clockwork Killer, and Whiskey Haze, as well as several others. Give us a brief introduction of yourself.
Hey, everybody. I am Justina Luther. I am a multi-genre author of clean stories with a twist. Clean stories generally have no sex, no cursing, and minimal gore.
That sounds very cool.
Very cool. My goal when I'm writing is, no matter how heavy the subject matter, if a parent, let's say, happens to leave their book open, they don't have to go, okay, wait, what scene is this? What page is this? If my kid walks in and starts, am I in trouble?
Fair. Okay, so we have, for the pit today, the goal is a down-to-earth human commentary or human drama using stalker, addict, and dementia.
Yeah, so okay, I got it. I feel like I got it. So I don't know if this is our protagonist or our antagonist yet, but I feel like it's got to be a male author, just because if he's going to be the antagonist, it's more creepy that way. Because you said stalker, right?
Yeah.
You said stalker.
You mean not male author, but a male character?
No, actually, I'm thinking the character is an author.
Oh, okay.
So this is my thought.
I'm with that.
Okay, awesome.
That.
Okay. So I don't want him to be too old. Let's say he's like in his 50s or 60s. And the problem is, and he's fairly prolific. Let's say he's maybe fairly well known. Maybe not. We'll figure that out as the story goes. But the point is, he's written too many books and it has affected his brain. And if we want to get the addict thing in there, we could say that maybe he's also has, there's something called alcoholic dementia, where people that have drank too much kind of sort of maybe pickle the brain a little bit. So that could be in there too. But okay, here's my idea that makes it unique. He's starting to confuse reality with some of his old book plots, and he's done so many. And I'm thinking this guy needs something to make him sad. He either needs a long dead wife, or he never ever got married to begin with. He's always been alone.
So this is a very sentimental gentleman.
Yes. And where he either becomes a villain or a sad protagonist is, I think he has to meet either a girl that reminds him, that's probably too young for him, because again, he's going to be in his 50s, 60s, but he's going to meet a girl, or a woman, I should say, that maybe reminds him of one of his female love interests in one of his books, or maybe he meets a young protege that reminds him of one of his young heroes or something, and he kind of mixes them up with his book characters, and that's where the stalker thing could come into play. And that's my jumping off point. So that's, I'm done for now, and yeah.
So what you were saying, immediately brought Alfred Hitchcock to mind for me because of his obsession with Tippi Hedren.
Mm.
So it could be that this author has found a cover model, say, for a series that he's working on. So he's going to be seeing her for multiple books and for promo tours and all that kind of stuff. So it would put them in close proximity.
Or, okay, continue. I'm sorry. I was feeding off of that.
No. Go.
Well, I'm thinking that he's set in Hollywood. And so he's writing a book that's also being portrayed as film. And so he's cross-genre, or not cross-genre, but cross-mediumed here, kind of like many authors have been. And so this is where the dementia plays into his writing versus the film versus reality all getting construed and mixed up.
Yes, because he's on set seeing his scenes come to life and people actually acting them out.
Yeah. And we could even layer on a little bit of him having experience as being an actor. And he's a method actor, to where he really dives into his characters and portrays them. And so that really gets that, that twisting of reality going.
Yes, I like this. And especially if he's always got his cup with him that he's drinking from, because I believe you have a actual prop with you that you're sort of taking off from.
So I do. Okay, I've been itching to actually bring this on the show. For our listeners, please forgive the fact that there's no visual for you, but I will do my best to verbally describe this. It is a standard coffee cup size, about 8 ounces-ish max. You would probably put 6 ounces of liquid in it. It is a bone china porcelain saucer with just a classic kind of coffee cup sidewalls with a little bit of a flare coming up to the top. And it doesn't have any like special ridges or texture or anything, but it's hand painted. And you can look up this style very easily on any one of your search engines, including DuckDuckGo. And it's a hand painted Soviet cup with a red rooster on it. And it's got some gold and some red, and it's just there with some like floral leaves and kind of like a garden situation. I will post this on our Twitter page for the purposes of you actually being able to find a photo of this. But my thought is, with this cup, it's kind of his grounding to reality as a sentimental thing. Maybe it was a wedding gift from a previous love that went awry. Maybe it has some sentimental issues going back to his mom, or some family history going back to the Soviet Union, where maybe he was an immigrant coming out of the fall of the Berlin Wall and the fall of the Soviet Union.
What if it was a gift from his deceased wife, who he based the character off of, and the actress that he ends up obsessed with looks like the character, and therefore late wife?
I love it.
And just because our listeners, I think, like getting a little taste of real history, and also just because I'm intrigued by this. So I know who Tippi Hedren is. I know who Alfred Hitchcock is, but I'm actually unaware of their little history you just mentioned. So, I mean, would you mind just briefly summarizing that, just to fuel our creativity and also give our listeners? Yeah.
There is actually, there are several documentaries, and I believe there was actually a movie made about this. He had Tippi Hedren in multiple of his movies, and he ended up, I believe, if memory serves correctly, he wanted a relationship with her, and she turned him down and did not go well. But that's why she was in multiple of his movies, because he kept bringing her back. So I believe, the name of the movie that was made is on the tip of my tongue, but I cannot think of it.
I mean, there's Birds, Psycho.
His movie. It was movie made about their.
Oh, I got you.
About them.
Okay.
And I cannot think of the movie. I watched it once, and it was so disturbing. I never watched it again.
One of our listeners is Googling it right now. So, they'll figure it out.
Yep. Yeah. So we'll have that in the link for the description of the podcast. We can't talk to it right now, but we can actually come back to it at another date.
Yeah. And see, I like this is what's cool about stories, is you start with like one idea and then it evolves into something more natural. So we started with authors because that's what we relate to. But I think now we're now on to either an actor or a director, and that is definitely better suiting the story, perhaps.
Maybe.
Perhaps he's a director who wanted to be an author.
I don't know.
A thought occurs. We could have a director or a storyteller in Hollywood, a script writer, that always had this series in his head about the story he's going to write, and he's burnt out with film and he's now so far deep into his career, doesn't know how to get out. Maybe career jump situation.
Yeah.
Ultimately, we have this guy who's got a love interest that resembles a character or his previous wife from, you know, days long gone. He's 50, 60 or so. He's kind of pickled his mind because he was a drinker.
Yeah.
He now is on set either through film or through book promos and cover artistry or whatever with this actress or model that resembles this love character.
Yeah.
And he has this rooster cup, which is a gift or some remembrance to that. Mm-hmm. And he's blending reality with fiction.
Yeah. I think I've got like an alternate little scenario that, okay. Let's say you remember how Rock Hudson and Doris Day used to do all those movies together, right? Uh-huh. Here's another creepy angle. You've got a power star couple who never like married or were together. They always had different spouses, but this actor and this actress would always do romantic films together. And so, okay. So now the male actor, he's old now. And the female actress, his co-star that perhaps he was in love with, she has a daughter now who looks just like her. And that's where the creepy stalker angle comes in, is he thinks the daughter is her because it looks like her when she was younger and all that.
Ooh, I like that.
Okay, cool.
What if the cup then is a set piece from an old movie that she gave to her daughter as like a good luck charm?
Awesome. Yes.
So that pulls back an old memory of his and he starts thinking, oh, she has this, therefore she is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, fill in the blank.
Yeah.
So now we have our setting of starting point to spring from. What is the contention?
Hmm.
I mean, clearly we got the stalker angle and this young actress's...
young woman being hit on by creepy old dude. Yeah. I think that's pretty contentious.
Yes. So what's the turning point? What's the domino that falls where this guy loses touch with reality?
What if it's the daughter's first movie and her mother comes to set to wish her luck and then he's forced to see the reality of his delusion versus reality?
Yeah.
Because he's seeing the woman he knows versus her daughter.
Yeah.
Another thought, I don't know if this would be, it's a different angle, better or worse, I don't know. It could be a remake of a film that they had done. And
I love that.
This woman's has passed away years ago. And this is the point where he's brought back into the set to consult on the recreation of
the
film.
Or he's playing the dad, because they love to do the thing where the previous actor now plays the dad, whatever. So or cameos, yeah.
Well, if he plays the father, then does that not give him an anchor of reality to the age difference between these two?
No, because there have been a lot of movies where the actor playing the parent is in old age makeup and they're only a few years older than their supposed child.
Okay.
So it could be that it trips him into every time he looks in the mirror, he's assuming he's in old age makeup.
Oh, that hits the dementia thing. He thinks that he's younger than he really is.
Yeah, Justina, now that's excellent. He just thinks he's wearing makeup. That's funny and it's creepy.
Awesome.
Wow.
So, and it also could be he catches the daughter watching like the original of the movie. She's trying to take down notes of what her mother did. And he's seeing, that could be the breaking point, actually, seeing the actual person on film versus the daughter, and his mind is seeing the slight differences. That could be the breaking point.
And then he's forced to choose between reality or fiction.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he'd rather just choose the fiction.
Or the fantasy.
Yeah.
Because it's comforting.
And that could also be the point where she catches on to what's going on, and he's not just being Uncle Whatever on set, you know, assuming she's known his name her entire life.
Yeah, that's true. She might actually know him. That's a good thought.
She might know, not only, I would say keep it at a distance for this, because if he's actually watched her grow up, that would be very strange for him to suddenly flip into that. But if she's always known of him, but let's say he and his co-star that he was in love with lost touch when she did get married finally, and you know, kind of put a stop to it, that would be where his memory stops, so to speak. So maybe he didn't know she had a daughter, maybe he didn't know all of this stuff until you know, meeting on set and getting into this movie and all that kind of stuff.
That also gives the trigger point for the addiction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so she's moved on, left Hollywood for whatever reason, or maybe she's still in Hollywood, doesn't really matter. But the breaking point between the relationship he had with her triggers his addiction, and he's stuck at that moment emotionally, and eventually pickles his mind through drink to the point where...
And chemically, he's still stuck in that time period.
Which gives us reason to believe and sympathize when he looks in the mirror and he's got all this makeup on and he's replaying himself during these time periods. He sees himself in the mirror as an old man. He thinks he's just makeuped. And then when he sees himself as a young man, that's how he sees himself, even with makeup on. He doesn't, he's totally lost touch with the transition. Okay, so we've got the starting point. We've got kind of this middle buildup, and we have the love interest now, this young actress, the daughter of his love interest. She's figured this out. What does she do? What's the emotions that she's going through?
I think she's stuck in a very difficult position because she knows the emotion that her mother did have for this man, and she knows that he is suffering and he is hurting. He's dangerous. He is no less dangerous because of this, but she's not necessarily going to respond to him in the typical way of immediately call the cops, immediately do this and all this type of legal stuff, because she's going, this is someone who meant a lot to my mother. This is someone who is hurting and needs help. So perhaps she takes a look at him as a wounded baby bird, when perhaps that is not the wisest or safest way for her to be viewing him.
So she has a sympathetic view and a sense of compassion
because of the relationship to her mother. And now, that is not to say that she goes along with the delusion by any means, but it may give her a momentary feeling of, maybe I can break him out of this, or I can explain it to him, which could then give us an action scene where the two fight. Does something more perhaps happen to her then? And he, my mind goes, okay, well, something then happens to her and he ends up in something with law enforcement because he's done something to her. But I don't know if you guys want to go that route.
Oh, okay. So I just had a flash in my head that, okay, I mean, it has to end with some sort of, I feel like we're doing kind of a vaguely suspenseful thriller, and therefore you have to have some scary thing at the end where maybe he's chasing her through the mansion, you know, probably to try and rape her or something. And then the police do come and maybe they shoot him. But the irony is his death resembles the death scene of one of his most famous characters. Yeah.
Yes. And what if it's like the original set from the movie, because they got like the old house that they originally filmed in. And so he ends up like,
very cool.
It ends up being the ending of the movie played out in real life.
So this allows you to add the foreshadowing at the beginning of the book.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Of like watching the movie, maybe she's watching the movie with her mother or something.
I like that.
And then it ends up playing out.
I really like that. So going into that transitionary period where she's discovering that his actions are not just him being a method actor, but actually he's delusional. There mm-hmm. comes to that breaking point, and that could be the buildup of suspension across the course of a couple of narrative chapters, of her having the story or having these events, you know, thrust upon her to the point where she reaches that realization, and then she becomes the active participant and changes the direction of these actions. And he's, you know, maybe set up this romantic scene from the film with a nice dinner. And
oh, that's so creepy.
He's,
I love it.
It's actually, you know, a recreation of the scene. He thinks he's actually, you know, in real life, maybe, you know, this scene is that it's all being, here's the director's point of view, right? What if you have it to where this is an actual scene of the movie? He thinks it's real life. She realizes at this point that he's delusional, but this is a scene that we're recording. And so what's really going on is camera and crew are there watching all of this, not realizing it's a legit threat of what he's trying to do to her. Uh-huh. They think they're just really in character.
Yeah.
And what if in the original movie, it had been something between him and the director, knowing that he very much had real feelings for his original co-star? what if the original scene had been somewhat ad-libbed as a way for him to admit his feelings, and it went sideways, but they kept it in the movie because it went so well.
That is amazing.
So then you're literally putting him back into a memory, mm-hmm. which is going to then further enforce his delusion. So you've got delusion and memory all kind of tangled together. So this poor man can't see up, down, or sideways.
That's spectacular. And then I was thinking, too, just so he doesn't become like a one-note cartoony villain, I think we kind of make him like a werewolf in terms of, let's say, you know, because
we weren't doing fantasy.
Oh, sorry. Sorry.
That was exactly where my head went.
What's the word I'm trying to use? Metaphorically speaking, like a werewolf, like most of the time he's a good person. And then, you know, he goes to his other side. So what I'm thinking is to make him a little more tragic. Let's say that his normal side, when he's with it and he's not suffering the effects of the on and off dementia, is he actually has paternal good appropriate feelings for her as like my co-star's daughter that I just want to help in the industry and I genuinely care about
her.
Yes. And then the dementia takes over, and then that's where I'm going with the werewolf analogy, that then he's bad. So then you can feel like he's not just a cartoon villain, and that way there's some tragedy to him and it makes the ending a little sadder when he dies.
You've got reason to sympathize.
Yeah.
Yes, because and honestly, with dementia or vivid dreams, and I'll just speak from real life for a moment here. As you may have heard me mention in previous episodes, I am a half of a caretaking team for my father. When my dad has very vivid dreams, because of the brain bleed, he doesn't know where he is, like, and he's very much in that dream. And so that is something doctors have told us from the get-go. Do not account anything he does during one of these dreams to him. This is not something that you lay the onus of at the foot of your dad. This is something a man in a dream is doing. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm,
yeah.
It's disconnected entirely from the human being that the person is. It's entirely the dream and the dream state or the dementia state or whatever you want to put in the book. It is truly completely different from the person as they are.
This has really been amazing. I'm proud of us. We did not only an episode with no aliens or monsters or magic.
You did mention werewolf.
But that was only metaphorical. That was metaphorical. But yeah, I don't like to be one of those hosts that's like, oh, this is the best episode we've ever done. And they say it every time. I really think this might be the best episode we've ever done, and coming up with a streamlined story that was probably a little easier to follow, because let's face it, sometimes we're like, oh, remember so-and-so who made the God Machine back 10 episodes ago, and he did this, and then I'm sure some of our listeners are like, what? But I think that we actually came up with a very good streamlined story that should be, like, this should be a movie. It's very good.
John, that's all strategic marketing to get people to binge watch our show.
Okay.
No, I agree with you, John. Yeah. I think that this was very well grounded mm-hmm. in a very plausible reality and hitting on subjects that are very important to the human experience and condition that we live in, and the reality that we face as being so bombarded with so much external stimuli.
Yeah.
And some people have healthy ways to cope and some people don't. And then, you know, there are unfortunate situations where you've got this blending of reality with fantasy that people struggle with.
Yeah.
And
I
think that this story could hit on those subjects, and a very talented author such as Justina or yourself could actually go through and, you know, do a good social commentary on some of those topics like addiction or dementia mm-hmm. and, you know, the struggle that an actor or actress or somebody in Hollywood suffers from, where they spend 70-80% of their life pretending to be somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've also often thought, especially with the recent influx of like VR helmets and augmented reality, what is it going to be like for this generation, our generation, all that kind of stuff, when they get to, you know, say 80, 90 plus years old, but they have these vivid memories in their head of having like a Tommy gun fighting a dinosaur because of a VR game they played, but they have that memory and they know it happened. And
So now we're getting into the idea of a futuristic sci-fi.
Yeah, we better stop ourselves now.
No, I think you should.
No, but I think that's maybe that sounds like in your wheelhouse, Justina, though, for kind of like BioLife, just that futuristic thriller.
Yes.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yes. And to that point, I think that at the very least could be a future episode that we end up doing when we go back from our human drama to more out there stories and crafts. Okay, so we have been here on the phone with author, best-selling author, Justina Luther, author of BioLife, Clockwork Killer, as well as Whiskey Haze. Justina, where can we find you in those books?
All of my books can be found on Amazon. You can also find them on www.authorjustinaluther.weebly.com. I am on Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, BookBub, Goodreads, and I'm sure many more places that I've completely forgotten my login information for.
Yeah,
totally understand. Thank you for taking time out of your day.
Yes, thank you. It was fun
to be on the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure. This is a blast.
And we will try to get you back on the program for another episode in a few weeks, maybe a couple of months, talk more about other works that you've got. And in the meantime, again, thank you, Justina Luther.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And I've been one of your two hosts today, William Atkinson and
John LeMay.
You've been listening to Plot Pit. If you're interested in submitting any of your works or potentially being on the program, send us an email at submissions@plotpit.com. You can find us on Twitter @PlotPit. You can also find us on YouTube @PlotPit. We will be putting some material out there in the coming weeks. You can listen to us on any of your major podcasting services such as Apple Podcasts, Google Play Store, etc. And look us up at plotbit.com. In the meantime, William Atkinson,
John LeMay,
and on the phone, Justina Luther. Thank you again, Justina.
My pleasure.
We will catch you in another episode. For now, you've been listening to Plot Pit.